Hello and welcome to another episode of Get Out of Rap. Something a bit different for you today. Every day in the team leader community, we do a live stream. This morning's discussion was about radical candor. I was joined by Pete Lees and Barry Cooper. I love the chat they shared so much, and I thought, why am I keeping this just for people in the team leader community? I will share it via this podcast. You'll have to put up with us just chit-chatting for a couple of minutes at the start. But this is the kind of thing that we cover every single day in the team leader community. And I hope you like it.
Hello. Hello, hello. Wednesday, the 13th of December. Are we getting close to that point of things slowing down? Probably not. Hello, Pete. How you doing? I invite you in. Callum's here as well. I'm going to invite you both in. There's no requirement, but you're more than happy. I'm more than happy for you to come in and join. Hello, mate.
Hi, man. How's it going?
I'm all right. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Let me just walk my screen so it doesn't look weird. I'm staring at this. See you now.
Where are you? Are you working from home?
Yeah. But I'm out in Romania. So.
Oh, yeah. I remember you saying.
Yeah, I've been all over this year. I was in Netherlands to start there because that's where the business is based. But I've been to a couple of months in Portugal, a couple of months in Albania. So it's been a busy year.
Yeah. I'm very jealous. Very
sounds better, mate. Grass was greener.
Oh, look, I spent my childhood, my dad was in the Air Force, so we moved everywhere. And then I ended up working in Hamburg, Madrid. Madrid was nice. And then Istanbul. Where else have I been? France. But through work, I think I love a bit of travel. Seeing different cultures and especially how they work. Will you be there over Christmas or?
Yeah, so my girlfriend's from here anyway. So that's kind of one of the reasons, because we're bootstrapping the business. It's just, it reduces my costs. But I'm coming back to the UK in second week in January. See family and stuff.
Nice. Now, I know you, I think Callum and Alex, I might have that wrong, but we were going to talk about candor.
Yeah.
Today. Here he is, straight out of the Western.
It's just
the task is, I can't get over it. I think I could look at it all day.
I won't go that far.
Barry, have you met Pete before?
Haven't. Pete, nice to meet you. How you doing?
Yeah, good mate. How are you doing?
Yeah, not bad, Tom. Not bad.
Nice to meet you.
Two Welsh people on the phone.
I was going to say, it's a nice accent on the call. Yeah, change. Fun. At Rhondda Valleys, so Paul.
Oh, Rhondda Valley. Yeah.
Rhondda
Valley, the mountain.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. So, with you two on the call and Callum watching, and this question's for you as well, Callum. Hands up if you can speak any Welsh.
I can do good morning. I think I can do
Yeah, I can do a few. Still count at 10 in Welsh if I
you
try
that. You buy tree pedra pimque saith with now deg.
Yeah, exactly.
I won't commit to 10. I commit to 5, not 10.
Dean dag pim. I lived in Anglesey when I was about 10, and the airbase there was new. So when we went there, there were no schools set up for service kids. So I had to go to a school called Cegiliog, and it was Welsh speaking. So the only class I ever did well in was English. The rest of the time, I was getting in trouble. Bobol Bach, I think, means naughty boy, because I remember that.
I remember that one. Yeah, we in the village we grew up in, there was an English and Welsh speaking school, and my mum purposely put me and my brother in the English speaking so that we couldn't talk back to him whilst so she was like, there's no way then to her conspiring behind my back in Welsh, so straight in the English we went.
Now this was when I was really getting into football as well. So we played Langfair PG, we called them, but it was Langfair, Penguiliof, Lantisiliof, Gogogov. They stuffed us 10-1, I remember once, so that was no good.
Ouch.
Yeah, I know. So,
and you've got a great way of, you retain a lot of stuff, man. Like, because I went to a Welsh-speaking school, but I did leave when I was really young, and it's all gone, really. I don't know how you retain that stuff if you don't use it.
No idea, but that is, I can remember some football term. The Fuff-Five Scythe, I think, is away shirt. Is it? I don't know. I've got, it's like when I lived in Germany, so I was playing football. I played football for an Air Force team, and then but mainly I was playing for a German team. And most of my German is all about football. So it's really that. If there's football link there, I can remember stuff. Otherwise, I've got early onset dementia.
Yeah. They're two languages that don't respect vowels. Don't any vowels in the Welsh language.
Like, yeah.
Both of them prefer like words the size of sentences. So,
yeah.
You know, they're not easy languages to learn.
Just stick with English.
So, Pete, was it you that put on the Canda thing yesterday?
Yeah, I love that book. I love that book. It was a friend of mine who's a people director when I was at Yopa, funnily enough. And he said, you've got to read this book. Like, this book is the almost like the Bible of how to support team members and develop them along their journey. And yeah, I love it. I love the quadrant. I don't know if you've seen the quadrant.
Yeah.
With like radical Kando comes, I think, in the top right corner. And then the quadrant does two directions. I think it's care personally and challenge directly. And unless you're like delivering radical Kando, there's kind of nowhere to go. If you're in the other three, you kind of do it wrong. And it's good, especially I've used it in one-to-ones. And especially with the ones, I tell you, the type of team members I've used it with more often than not is the ruinous empathy, which is the guys that they really care for their team, but almost are on that dangerous line of wanting to be liked by them first, rather than develop the team members. Do you know what I mean? That is kind of the wrong priority. And it's trying to get them to understand that, like, yes, you know, you're doing the right thing from in the short term, but you're also doing the right thing from in the long term as well. And when we got into it, we were talking about it with my team. I said, I'd love to see the statistics and the correlation between the managers that are generally liked when you do employee satisfaction surveys and how many of their team members go on to be promoted and developed within the 12 or 18 month period. Because I believe they're probably just as hindered as having a bad manager at times, because they're not being challenged to the point that they're developing that allows them to compete with other aspiring team managers.
What would you say then, if someone said to you, explain what candor or being candid means in the sense of team leadership, what would you say?
It's a good question. I'd say, like, I like the thing, if I was guilty of anything, I sometimes slid into the obnoxious aggression stuff just because time sensitivity of giving feedback. But I'd like to think, and maybe Alex can testify to this, because obviously I worked with Alex for a long time, but even when my feedback was really direct, so I can be really direct sometimes, it always came from the best place. I never did it to manipulate anyone. I love seeing people progress. It's a drug to me. And it was my biggest KPI when I worked in centers, is trying to get as many of my guys promoted as possible. But sometimes I would be too direct doing it. So for me, radical candor is literally, you combine the two sort of lines with a quadrant. It's caring personally, but make sure that you're constantly challenging directly. So, and I think as long as you can challenge from the right, as long as it comes from the right place, like, I think people will accept you if you come outside the line slightly. They'd rather somebody that pays for them, that can make mistakes at times, rather than somebody that's just, you know, being nice and just trying to keep everything on an even keel all the time. So I think that's how I would sort of describe it.
I would say I certainly at the start of my career started in that kind of ruinous empathy place where I just wanted people to be happy. If they liked me, brilliant. But we went on this course about being candid. It's called Grid International, and it was based on radical candor. And I must admit, I found that uncomfortable until I got comfortable with being candid, let's say. And this trainer said to me this great analogy that I remember. So he would say, if he was assessing the two of me and you, he would say, you're the M1 Yeah, you're straight. It's a straight line. You just go there. I would be taking every road but the M1. B roads. I would occasionally go onto an A road. I'd be going all over the place. It would take me longer because I would be going around the issue rather than, you know, like you say, if it's based out of a place of care, then it's actually detrimental not to be candid. So people can't progress, improve, correct things, develop if you're not being candid. Because candid, for me, comes hand in hand with clarity as well. So it's very clear. It's not person-based. It's outcome-based or behavior-based or action-based. How for people that are not aware of it or not practicing it, how best to start? How does it manifest itself in a coaching session, for example?
It's a really good question. The problem with like radical candor, like if you're looking at, if you're self-reflective, you have to have such a high level of self-awareness to know where you are in the quadrant. And I think sometimes there's an outside, they need an outside perspective to give them real sort of real life scenarios where they can say, in this scenario, I felt that if you look at it, if you educate them on the quadrant, I say, during this, like this interaction, you fell into this side of the quadrant and break it down like that almost. And then start to use the quadrant to say, right, this is the sort of language you want to move towards radical candor. But in relation to, like, you know, you said, you made a really good point, Martin, about like you started off in the one, you know, in the ruinous empathy. I was probably more in the obnoxious aggression. I would say like 99% of managers start in one of them two places. I think it's like in regards to self-awareness, I think it's easier to teach somebody that is in the obnoxious aggression side of it, because it's easier to point out examples than the ruinous empathy. But once the ruinous empathy person becomes self-aware, because they generally care and you've showed them that their style of caring isn't as effective, as soon as they can see that, they change very quickly. So I think it's easier to take somebody from ruinous empathy to radical candor than it can be from obnoxious aggression there, because the care exists, if that makes sense. Like, it's hard to get somebody to care when they don't care. But
yeah,
when somebody already cares, it's easier to teach them a different way of caring, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so it's good. It's just, it's such a tough one. And Alex made such a good point on the platform yesterday that he keeps practicing it all the time, because, you know, even you can give somebody feedback and during that feedback, like you've fallen into the obnoxious aggression side or you've fallen into the ruinous empathy side. You know, it's one of them things that you're educating somebody, but you're also trying to make sure you stay within the right lines as well. So, but the book is like, and Kim Scott does really well. Is that obviously she wrote a Google, and I think it was Twitter she was at as well. It was super, super, you know, amazing exec. No wonder these companies do so well. But she's very honest about like her mistakes and when she fell outside of radical candor and, you know, how she rectified it. And I think to really get the most out of it, there has to be a level of self-awareness. If there's no self-awareness there, I think it's very hard to change.
Mm. Barry, you, as a expert coach, to what extent does candor come into your approach?
A lot. I think this is the first time I've come across this kind of book. I've not seen the book and I've not heard of Kim. So it was interesting having a look at it last night. It is interesting looking at it today. I think for me, it becomes about the thing that we all want, right? Like when I was reading this last night and looking at some of this stuff last night, and I've ordered the book as well, by the way. So thanks for that, Pete. It's always something to be reading. I'm just got to get through my boardroom book first. But it is being caring while being honest, right? Like it's what we want. Like half of the time when we talk about imposter syndrome, or we talk about, I don't know what I need, or I'm not sure where I'm going, or I don't know if I'm doing the right things as an individual, when I'm looking at my manager or I'm looking to the people around me, actually what I want is a little bit of honesty, right? I want somebody to be quite candid with me and go, actually, the example, I just sent out my 360 feedback for my end of year this year, and I've picked a load of people that I think will be quite candid with me. That's what I want, right? Like I've picked people that I think, maybe I haven't worked with you very well this year. I know I've rubbed you up a couple of times the wrong way, and I know you've rubbed me up a couple of the wrong times. You can have my 360 this year because I want to know you'll be open, you'll be honest. but you'll do it in the right spirit, right? With care and with thought, and you will kind of give me the real candid bit that I'm looking for. You won't just tell me, you know what, you're great at this, but you could do a little bit better at that. That's not what I want. What I really want is, actually, when I think I've rubbed you up this year the wrong way, I want you to say, on this occasion, you did do this, and this is the bit that you need to do differently because it wasn't good. And if you continue to do that, you and I aren't going to have a relationship. That's what I'm after. Mm-hmm. So as a coach, it's really interesting to go, actually, how do I get there? We talk about a lot of open questions. We talk a lot of kind of understanding maybe as a leader what I want out of that session, right? So if I'm doing a coaching session as a team leader with somebody on the team, I might already know that I need them to improve on their complaints, or I might need them to, I don't know, make sure that they use more open questions, you know, those types of things in their calls or whatever it is that I'm doing in the contact center. I'll ask a load of open questions to get there, which is great because they're going to buy into that. They're going to kind of come up with the action. The power of the silence that we talked about, Martin, quite a bit, you know, in terms of I can be really silent on that. But then when I give that feedback, I probably just need to be candid about it, right? Like if I'm not getting what I want, I need to just go to that. Well, look, I'm not really getting to where we need to be here. This is what you need. This is the bit that needs to change. And this is why it needs to change. I think it's really interesting. I'm looking forward to having a read.
I wonder as well, Pete, how much... what I found, I really was able to take the step into being candid was having structure. And it didn't just help my management and coaching of my team. It was all of our peer group went on this course, right? So we had a shared language and structure. We'd all gone through the course that meant our relationships amongst each other improved as well. But without a structure, I think you're more likely to make some, from my point, you know, from the person that I am and certainly was then, I was worried about blundering into being candid without care, because you're just like, oh, I'm going to tell you this. And that's me being candid. Whereas this structure that they taught us was using certain sentences. And I think however people, if they're not particularly good at candor, that get the book, find a way of having structure and just try it out, but let your team know that you're trying it out as well. So I came back from this course and said, right, you know, there's going to be things. They knew me by this point, which made it kind of easier. They knew that I cared for them. So they knew that what I was trying to do was to your point, develop them and not leave things unsaid.
Going back to Pete's bit earlier as well, it was really interesting, is that bit of like, we get tied up in that, like almost wanting people to like us before we, as a leader, right? I want you to like me as a leader. I want you to do it. Like, and you go, actually, that's not really what I'm here for, right? Like, I of course I want to be liked. I think that's the human nature side that we've talked about as well, in terms of like, as a human, I want to be liked. I want, you know, there's certain things that I want and I want to feel like I'm achieving and the people, you know, I want a feeling that I'm helpful and I'm all of those things. And being liked and having those things aren't really connected, right? Like to be liked, what you might need is somebody to sit down with you and go, or I might need somebody to sit down. I might need mine to tell me to go, Barry, that thing that you do on LinkedIn is absolutely shocking. Stop doing it. This is why. Do this instead. And that might help me more than the, yeah, that's not bad, that mate. You know, maybe you want to think about tweaking this. Maybe you want to think like, actually, just get it done, like pull the plaster off. But in that noise, like you say, in that care, coming from a caring space, I think that's great.
I think the thing that stops people doing it, because I think once you do it, you're off. It's like an epiphany. Once you do it, you're off. But because I think the thing that stops you is the fear that your relationship will be damaged beyond repair with that person you're being handed with, when in fact it doesn't. Now I apply it in all facets of my life. So I run a men's football team there's loads of us. There's like 50 people in the group, and I run the girls' football. Even with the guys, yeah, there's occasionally some conflict over something on the pitch or whatever. The way I deal with it is true candor, because you can't
you can't, it's not resolved unless you're candid. If I'd have done nothing because I wanted to maintain everyone a harmony, like misplaced idea of what harmony was, what the other thing that happened is other people went, I'm glad you sorted that out so quick. That's great.
Well, it removes the favoritism piece then, right? Doesn't it? It removes that, well, I've given Barry, I've told Barry 5 times about this piece of feedback to Pete and he's not done anything with it. Whether I have done anything with it or not, if I'm going that long route and going, Pete, can you do this? Pete, can you do that? And I'm being nice about it. And Pete doesn't change his behavior. The person who gave me that feedback originally then looking at me going, are you doing anything with that feedback? Like, and like you say, they then get that kind of, well, what's the point? Like, I don't, why am I bothering? Because nothing's changing. Whereas if I could turn around to Pete and go, Pete, like, this is the candor side of it. This is the bit I need you to change. And this is why I need to change it. And this is why you need to change it straight away. Like you say, you get that instant from the other people around in the team going, oh, nice. That's working. That works.
I think the real, like what you touched on earlier, Martin, is so key is consistency. Is that like, you're not going to get away with that approach if everyone in the team is not having the exact same approach. Like you said, like with favorites and so on. One of the things that I used to do after I'd given some direct feedback or developmental feedback, I hate the word constructive criticism. It sends a shiver through my spine. I like developmental feedback. Whenever I'd given developmental feedback, I used to make it a priority or like to go back to the same person within sort of half an hour to an hour and just have a normal conversation with them that's non-work related. Because I if anyone has seen me run a call center, I turn into like a giant youth club and I know everybody. I know their families and stuff. I'm not the type of manager that likes to be locked away in an office, but, and I go and I want to show them it's not personal. Like I go to my way. Sometimes I'll pull my arm around them if it's a bit tough of feedback and go, look, you're better than this. We both know you're better than this. Like I love you. I love having you in the team. Like you're brilliant for us, but I need to see better in this area moving forward. And normally it coincides with a better performance because they can see that you literally care. So, and Alex will tell you, I've done that quite a few times with him, and he'll tell you, and he's probably right, that the more I like you, the harder the time you get. Because the people I put more faith in, and, you know, I use Alex as an example because he got promoted like 3 times in like 18 months with me, and he was a, like, I couldn't have run that center maybe even half as good without him there because he was that important. But he got it tough as well. But he'll tell you that toughness probably helped him develop quicker. And he's a brilliant one for taking feedback. Like he will really go away and strip any of my nonsense away, or if my delivery wasn't perfect, he'll kind of forget that and focus on the intended message. And when you can get people into that mindset, like it's far easier job. I was just going to say, you touched on a really good point, Martin, that when you talked about this, it allowing for space, people with different personality types who've taken radical candor for the first time to digest it and so on. Like managers imagine the past and try to get them into that space. I said, one of the telltale signs that you're doing it well is that people, your feedback will age well, right? So it'll hurt in a moment, but like the number of times, more recently, because I've run startups in the last 3-4 years, but like I had a product manager that pretty much despised me when I joined because I took the MD position from his best mate and a lot of, you know, personal nonsense stuff. And I gave him some feedback on the back of his behaviors when he first started. And when he left, he joined a different company. He came up to me and said, that feedback was the best feedback I ever had. Like he said, it hurt for 2 weeks. I took it super personally. I thought it was more to do with our relationship than it was to do with my personal performance. But when I went away and digested it and sort of reflected, like I realized that it was a huge area I needed to improve on. And he said, I just want to thank you for that. So that's the real heart warmer where you're like, I worked out for the best in the end. Like it wasn't, you know, because you don't want people walking around thinking that you're just going on to upset people. Because that's not what you're trying to do. But sometimes that's the way it can come across. So when people come back to you and say that stuff, you're like, it kind of reinforces the fact that I am doing the right thing. It's you know, I'm not doing something that's having a negative impact in the long run.
I love that.
Yeah, it's brilliant, isn't it? And all I was gonna say was not as good as that. And what I was gonna say is it comes back to a little bit what we were talking about and what we talked about in the past around emotional intelligence and the change curve, right? Like when they take that, it's not a feedback that you're giving, it's about how they're taking that feedback. It's about their feeling. Like and you get like it's hard as a leader, I can imagine. Like I really looking forward to reading this book and coming back to Pete on it a bit more. Like, but like, I can imagine, like, for us, it's hard to give that anyway, because you know you might going to be hurting their feelings a little bit, but you know you have to. But then once I've given that, they're not my feelings anymore, right? So yeah, absolutely, take that time, take that space. So you want them to understand that, you know, we need to teach them how to understand their own emotions and what that emotion is. Actually, that like, is it Peter doesn't like me, or is it I'm hurt because it's true? Like, do you know what I mean? Like,
I love you mentioned the change curve, because I was thinking about it yesterday as I was writing the post, and that you just mentioned it. I go, oh my word, I thought, because you don't know people speak about the change curve. It's so important when it comes to managing, especially transition from, like, I think I'd never heard of the Magic Weekend before. That made me laugh yesterday. I'd never heard of it, but it hit me hard, because the number of times, like, I think when I got promoted from team manager to ops manager, I'd only been a team manager for 9 months, and I went from managing 15 people or 150 people. So I went from never managing to managing 150 people, 9 months. And I never forget the moment when they come and told me, because Roy White, he was heading up Conduit on like a contractual basis, just covering a spot until they found a head contact center. He came up to me and he asked me, no, so nonchalant. It was like, I thought he was going to ask me to go get him a coffee from Costa. He was like, Pete, I need a favor from you. I was like, anything, what's up? And he's like, oh, I need you to look up the zone B downstairs. What do you mean? And he was like, well, they've got no manager. The manager just said, I need you to go down it. I was like, well, the entire department. And he was like, yeah, just pop down now. I was like, what about my team? And he was like, oh, no, we've got him to cover your team. Okay. He said, just go pop down and introduce yourself. And I think I hit about 3 tiers of that change curve on the stairs going down. Every step I took, I had to think about it, because I did the fear part of it. And I was like, well,
I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this.
He managed something. They're 14 of them were older than me. They don't want me. But yeah, you get around it. But it's so good for helping transition, because you can actually see what is different. And yeah, when you mentioned that, then it hit me like that. Change curve.
I used to say to my team, if we're going to be candid and use candor with our teams, right, the thing you can't do is just fire and forget. You can't get the thing that you're most uncomfortable about delivering and then just go. I said, because that doesn't mean to say that you smother them, because like you say, some people need time. Other people will try and take action straight away. But one of the things I think is really important, the feedback delivered candidly has to come in conjunction with clarity around what's expected and how you can help someone do that. And again, forgive me, another analogy about, so this, I manage a girls' football team. We've got two coaches that help out. One of the things that the girls, some of them have hardly ever kicked a ball before. It's no good as the whole pie chart of our interaction with them can't just be praise. It can't just be, yeah, you're doing great. Because they need to know, they have asked, I've heard them say to some of the coaches at times, how should I do it? I've obviously done that wrong. You said, oh, never mind. Well done. Try again next time, Izzy. Well done. Keep going. And I said, you know, the language is important. It's always got to be encouraging. It can't be criticism. But you can be candid and go, yeah, you're right. That wasn't a great pass, but here's how you should try it next time you come up, and training's the place to fail. It's no problem. But you can't just be candid and with no follow-up instructions, with no try this. Yeah. Put your foot in this position and put your standing leg here. Next time, try that. And then you're there ready for when they do it. And I think it's the same with work. You can't just go, I didn't like how you did, or this behavior wasn't to the standard, or this output wasn't to the standard. We need to correct it and then go. That's not candor. That's kind of like half the job.
But I love your football analogy. I really do, because you ask yourself the question, what's going to be tougher? Me telling this person that, or they need to change the way they pass, or their first touch needs to be better, or so on, and you try to fix it in the moment, or you tell them they're great, and then they turn up the county trials in 2 years' time, and they don't get a look in, and every girl looks 10 times footballer. So whether you teach them or the world teaches them, they'll get it one way or the other. And they're far better off you teaching them than the world, because the world's ruthless. So the better you put your arm around them and saying, hey, you know, I'm going to show you how to cross the ball better, or hey, I'm tell you, I'm going to sort your positioning outdoor and so on, then you get in some, again, whoa, like what a waste of time the last 2 years.
And it's because we're team leaders or leaders of people, you're in a position because you do know how to do stuff. So share it. But I think you've got to share, you know, you have to share it clearly and then support someone as they're trying it out for the first time with you kind of going, look, you're not going to get it right first time. If you do, great, but let's fail together. That's fine. But you've got to try something new. And again, it comes back to that you're with them as they're going through the change curve, even if it is down the stairs.
Yep. I was going to write a post about this. It kind of links onto this. So I'll explain it if you don't mind, Martin.
Well,
you know, a lot of people I find that, especially when I'm coaching them, like one of my proudest metric at Conduit at British Gas was we had 15 team managers promoted in the 1 year of the 60 teams, and five of them came from my team. And it wasn't a coincidence, because I kind of, within 3 to 4 months of being in management, the first time I realized that obviously I wanted to push on. I didn't want to be a team manager forever. But at the same time, I recognized that for my team to have buy-in to get me to the performance levels that would allow me to stand out as sort of a future ops manager, I had to invest in my team to the point where they knew that I had their back in their career too. So what I did was, which I find a lot of managers don't do this because they, like, sometimes there's a lack of security. But I knew I had to get rid of as much of my role as possible into my team. So anything I could, right? Yeah. And obviously we had service level agreements with resourcing, so I couldn't take people off left, right, and center, because British Gas would go crazy. But, you know, I had as many people market calls for me as possible, many people do much admin, so that when they came to go into interviews for team manager jobs and so on, they would be one step ahead of the competition. And also what I would do is, if I promised everyone in the team, if you hit all your metrics, your one-to-one won't be a session about your performance. I'll teach you how to conduct a disciplinary. I'll teach you how to do I'll teach you how to do a one-to-one. So I'll teach you all the stuff that you need to get to the next step. And what I did was, half of my time was freed up. And I used to just go to the ops manager continuously, and I just poking, anything I can do for you, anything I can do for you. And after a month, he gets so sick of me poking him, start giving me work. Within 3 months, I'd halved his job. And then anytime he went to cover another zone, or anytime he was off sick or went on holiday, I was the natural choice, because I knew how to do half of it. So I think if you can get that cycle in place, you'll struggle to fail, because everybody in your team is doing so well and their careers looked after. And they know the minute that performance drops, all the coaching in one-to-one stop, it goes back to, right, you know, you did perform last month, let's talk about your performance. You're like, well, I thought you were going to show me how to give feedback. Said, well, I'll have to wait till next month now. Got performance to focus on. And I was going to write a post on it. I might still do if you don't mind. But
yeah, I absolutely love that.
Yeah.
An effective use of time at one-to-ones that ties in with development as a motivational tool, as a real focus. Absolutely love that.
Yeah, it was my badge of honor. Obviously, I was in like 26, 27, so I was way more arrogant and way less humble. But I can remember just walking around and be like, yeah, you know, the next set of team managers, they're all here if you want to come meet them, and, you know, all that rubbish. But yeah, five in 1 year. So, but it was, the only problem was I was constantly getting backfilled. And obviously sales performance was huge for me. Like, I was a sales trainer before I went into the stats. So it was constantly trying to get the next person up to the required run rate in our team. And we even in the team, like we set our own KPIs. So like conversion across the site, they needed to hit 3%. But we always talked about the target being 10%, because they just left a massive gap. We didn't hit our target to still be one of the best teams in the center.
Love that.
Yeah.
It's great, isn't it? Because you see them all developing, you see them all moving, and then you turn around and you think, oh, my team's dead, and I've got to start all over again. Last year, like we brought work back in onshore, and yeah, I lost people from my team, like, just because they've gone out into other roles in the business from doing exactly what you said, Pete. Do you know what I mean? Like, well, do you want to do this? Do you want to do that? Where does your, you know, what interests you? Is it QA? Is it this? Is it that? I've got a couple in AML. We've got a couple in regs. We've got a couple in legal. We've got a couple in finance. And it's like, I need to do some recruiting. Please just start again.
I love this though, but I'm sure I've seen language that stuck with me where it's someone with their back to a wall and they're holding their hands out like that for to help the person over the wall. And it just had like leadership underneath, you know, that, and that's what the two of you evidence of, you know, that kind of, there shouldn't be a better champion for someone's development than their team leader. That you are the person poking, going, come on, come on, come on. I love it.
And the thing I never factored in, which was really helpful for me, was when I stepped into that ops role, because so many of my managers had been promoted, they put a lot of them into my zone. So say there was, I don't know, 14, 15 managers, 5 of them had already worked under me. So my transition into ops, which should have been a bigger jump, wasn't, because I already had one further team that fully believed in my methodology anyway. So it was just getting the rest on board. And like the only bit of advice I'd give to any manager listening, like some of the managers I was 26 when I took that ops role. I had managers that were like 50 plus that had been in contact centers like 20 years. And like, you definitely have to think about how you approach stepping into that type of role when you're dealing with somebody with that much experience. And the advice I'd give is just be super respectful. And I remember the first team meeting I gave, like I was just thinking, right, don't overstep the boundary because you'll lose everybody's respect straight away. And I didn't even put myself as a manager. I said, hey, look, this has happened. Until a replacement is found, I don't, as a support function for you guys. So if you've got any questions around this, any questions about that, if you need any support with this, I'm going to be sad over that corner. You can come speak to me anytime you want. And what I found was there was quite a few managers that weren't performing that came to me first and said, oh, look, I'm struggling to get my attrition levels down, or my productivity is not where it's supposed to be. And I sit down, a bit of a plan together. And slowly but surely, everybody kind of comes over and sort of backs you. And within 3 months, you can start giving sort of a radical candor to somebody that's double your age, and they bought into what you're doing because you've been respectful in the way you manage that relationship.
I love it.
It's a bit brilliant.
You guys have shared so much. Thanks so much for this. It's been awesome, and I would recommend anyone in the community. I'll share it today. I'll share the recording, but I found it fascinating. I'll try and do something around maybe some little giveaway of a copy of the book, because it is brilliant. So Pete, Barry, have a great day. Thank you, Pete.
That was brilliant. I enjoyed it. Thank you.
See you. Have a good one. See you tomorrow.
Take care.
I hope you enjoyed that. We're so lucky to have Pete and Barry in the community. We have about 320 leaders in there now. Would be more than welcome to have you join as well. You don't have to be a team leader to benefit from being in the community. As you can imagine, with the likes of Pete and Barry sharing their experiences, some of our more inexperienced leaders are really benefiting. That's it from Get Out of Wrap today. Thanks so much, and take care of yourselves.